Continuing with the New Human Revolution, Volume 2, Chapter 2, Training, we will read from page 110 to 132 today. So let's begin.
A short while later, the young man in charge of communication for the event hurried over to report to one of the leaders. "They're ready with our meals now," he reported, "but they need about 20 people to help them carry them over." Only after hearing this report did the leaders finally instruct members to assist the meal crew. On the grass some distance away, a group of people stood watching the activities. They were Soka Gakkai members who lived in the neighboring city of Choshi. One middle-aged man approached the Suiko Kai members and addressed a young man sitting on a straw mat. "Excuse me, we'd really like to say hello to President Yamamoto. Would it be all right if we joined you?" "No, that's out of the question. We're having a training camp for the Suiko Kai today. Sensei is not here on a guidance tour of Choshi, you know," he retorted curtly. He was speaking to a precious fellow member. No matter what the circumstances, such an attitude is utterly heartless. Shinichi silently observed this exchange, his expression grim. Looking dejected, the man headed back to the small hill where his fellow members were waiting. Shinichi stood up and walked after him. When he reached the group of local members, he called out, smiling, "Thank you for coming. I'm so happy to see you. Let's have a discussion meeting." The members' faces lit up when they saw Shinichi. "Sensei, welcome to Choshi." The middle-aged man who had spoken with the Suiko Kai member now stepped forward and greeted Shinichi, his voice brimming with joy. "Thank you," said Shinichi. "Please sit down. Let's talk as we take in the view of this magnificent ocean. This is a fine place. The scenery is wonderful." The several dozen local members seated themselves around Shinichi. Clouds gleamed silver in the twilight sky. The nearby lighthouse was bathed in golden hues, and a pleasant breeze blew. Please feel free to ask me anything you like," Shinichi said, smiling. "This is a conversation among friends." The members seemed somewhat shy at first, but soon one and then another opened up and shared their problems. There were questions about difficulties at work, the illness of a family member, and other concerns. Shinichi answered each question earnestly and sincerely, adding an occasional touch of humor. An elderly man with a deeply tanned face raised his hand. "I'm a fisherman. Ever since the American military conducted anti-aircraft artillery maneuvers off the Kujukuri coast after the war, our fishing haul has gone way down. The testing is over now, but the fish still haven't returned. What can we do to bring them back?" "It must be very hard for you. But Buddhism teaches that you can change even the realm of the land, the place where you live, through your inner resolve. The most important thing is Daimoku. Let's all keep praying for an abundant catch. I, too, will send my Daimoku." An elderly woman then asked, "Sensei, may we sing our fisherman's feasting song for you?" "Thank you. I'd love to hear it. Everyone, please join in. Sing with the determination to bring in a big haul." "May we really? Okay then, here we go." The woman looked deeply moved as she began to sing. Everyone clapped in rhythm with the song and joined in. Taking on board one haul and then another, the fishing boat, filled with its magnificent catch, makes its way into the river mouth, a great cry resounding with each stroke of the oars. Their voices rose into the evening air and blended with the sound of the waves. Everyone's face, including Shinichi, glowed with the color of twilight. When their song ended, Shinichi warmly applauded them. "Thank you," he said. "That's a wonderful song. I'm touched. It was filled with your determination to realize an abundant catch." He continued, "I'd like to give you something as a memento, but unfortunately, I didn't bring anything with me today. I hope you won't mind if I pick some flowers instead and present them to you as a gift." Shinichi got up and began picking the flowers that grew in the grass around them. "Here, everyone, these are my gifts to you." He exchanged a few words with each member as he offered each one a flower. "How is your husband?" he asked an elderly woman. "He's getting on in years and is rather unsteady on his feet, so he stayed home today." "I see. I'll give you a flower for him too, then. Please tell him that I wish him the best of health." He also handed a flower to a small boy clinging tightly to his mother's leg. "Please study hard," said Shinichi, stroking the child's head. The little boy grinned at him and nodded. The Choshi members held the wildflowers, which Shinichi had picked for them so sincerely, close to their hearts as if they were precious treasures. "I hope to see you all again," said Shinichi with a smile. "I'll be the one to see you off today." The sun had already set and darkness began to gather around them. Shinichi firmly shook each person's hand. As the members made their way home, they turned back again and again to wave at Shinichi, reluctant to leave him behind. "Goodbye, Sensei." "Take care, everyone," Shinichi shouted back, waving to them as they receded into the distance, his warm voice melting into the twilight. The scene of their parting was like a beautiful painting. Meanwhile, preparations for the Suiko Kai's fireside dinner were finally complete. The group's core leaders, including the YMD chief Shoichi Taneda, went to meet Shinichi as he approached. "Sensei, dinner's ready. Please join us," said Taneda. Shinichi just kept walking, saying nothing. After a short distance, he burst out angrily. "Just what on earth is the Suiko Kai for, Taneda?" Saying no more, Shinichi quickened his pace. "I know. I'm sorry." Obviously, Taneda had also sensed the inertia and laxity that pervaded the Suiko Kai members. Reaching his seat, he said sternly to the senior leaders of the young men's division, "I'm not going to entrust Kosenrufu to the Suiko Kai. You're like a bunch of defeated soldiers." Shinichi really didn't want to say this, but the sight of their apathy and lack of spirit compelled him to do so. The young men stared at him with stunned expressions. Some immediately realized their error and felt deeply sorry. But many looked as though they hadn't the faintest idea why Shinichi was angry or what he was trying to say. Shinichi was not upset by the delay in the meal. He was deeply pained that the young men had forgotten their responsibilities as members of the Suiko Kai, to be the pivotal force for Kosenrufu and carry on President Toda's legacy. Beside him, Taneda bowed deeply in apology and said, "Sensei, I'm truly sorry. We've shown you an appalling display of laxity that is a far cry from the spirit of the Suiko Kai. I take full responsibility." Night continued to close in around them. Shinichi gazed sternly at Taneda and said in a strong tone, "The Suiko Kai ought to be a group of valiant young men committed to shouldering full responsibility for the Sokagakai and for Kosenrufu, shouldn't it? Today we were supposed to make a fresh start towards realizing the vision of our mentor, President Toda. But from your behavior today, I cannot discern the slightest sense of responsibility or indication of a dynamic seeking spirit. What would President Toda say if he saw you? A Suiko Kai whose members have forgotten their vow to Sensei is nothing but a gang of undisciplined youths. In that case, I'd rather spend my time encouraging those admirable members from Shochi than having dinner with you." The young men listened to Shinichi's words with grave expressions. The deep significance of this particular outdoor training camp had been impressed upon them again and again. Yet, though they had understood this intellectually, some part of them had still thought of it as a recreational activity. It began to dawn on them, at last, that this attitude had manifested itself in their every action. I am speaking to you so harshly because I want you to understand the hopes our mentor cherished for the Suikokai, and because I want to help each of you develop into a great leader of Kosen Rufu and live the most magnificent life. Yes, the members responded, waiting tensely for his next words. However, Shinichi said pleasantly, "Let's eat dinner. You must all be hungry." The young men ate their tonjiru and canned food in silence. It was a meal during which each was compelled to ruminate upon his own neglect. Those who have someone to guide them, someone who will strictly admonish them on occasion out of concern for their future and their role in the coming era, are fortunate. Steel must be tempered while it is hot. Such rigorous training is necessary to achieve great things. Nothing is more unfortunate than never having such opportunities for training in one's youth. Dinner over, it was time to light the pile of firewood around which they sat and start the campfire. The leaders accompanying Shinichi, including some members from the Soka Gakkai Board of Directors, then rose one by one to address the gathering. Apart from General Director Koichi Harayama, they were all graduates of the Suikokai. One director, Hiroshi Yamagiwa, a former youth division chief, began to speak. "I am a Suikokai member, but since graduating from the youth division, my heart gradually drifted from the Suikokai without my being aware of it. And today as well, I came along without making any firm determination." Yamagiwa was contrite and self-reflected as he continued. "However, hearing President Yamamoto's guidance here today, I feel as if my eyes have been opened. We mustn't regard our membership in the Suikokai as being limited to our time in the youth division," he continued. "Today, I realized for the first time that we can call ourselves true Suikokai members only when we apply our Suikokai training throughout our lives and steadfastly exert ourselves to fulfill our vow. I am truly ashamed for not realizing this sooner. Our membership in the Suikokai is something that stays with us for life. Today, I strongly sense that the moment we regard our Suikokai membership merely as a pleasant memory of our youth, we will be regressing, and we will have forfeited our right to call ourselves members of the Suikokai. From today on, I am determined to advance energetically towards Kosen Rufu together with President Yamamoto, cherishing the awareness that I am a youth division member for life. If it is the nature of youth to burn with hope for the future and advance unswervingly in accord with their beliefs and ideals, then human beings must maintain the spirit of youth throughout their lives. This is the spirit that leads to profound satisfaction in living and the attainment of a truly complete life." Following speeches by several other directors, Shinichi Yamamoto spoke. The fire roared, its flames seeming to scorch the evening sky. He spoke slowly, carefully weighing each word. "It was I who chose Inubosaki as the site for this Suikokai outdoor training camp. I decided on this location after giving the matter a great deal of thought. There is a lighthouse here. No matter how tempestuous the seas, this lighthouse serenely continues to send out its light, guiding ships to the correct course. This lighthouse symbolizes the Suikokai, and the passing ships are the people of the world. The lighthouse illuminates the sea at night. It is a reassuring guide for passing ships. In the same way, only when you win the respect and trust of people the world over, when you can make people feel, whatever happens, as long as we have the members of the Suikokai, We'll always be all right. We can rest assured. Only then can you call yourself a genuine Suikokai member. All of you have a mission to shoulder the future of humanity. Gathering around a campfire for outdoor training like this has been a Suikokai tradition since President Toda's day. There is profound meaning in this. Mr. Toda said that the burning firewood represents our life as well as the flames of faith and the Soka Gakkai spirit. He wanted to teach us that we can hope to illuminate society with the invigorating light of hope and peace only if we keep the fire of our lives well stoked and the flame of our faith burning brightly. Everyone sat riveted, absorbing the guidance. The campfire brightly illuminated the faces of the young men. Shinichi paused for a moment, then continued, his tone all the more compelling. In light of the Daishonin's teachings, Kosun Rufu can certainly be achieved. Nevertheless, there is no guarantee that the Soka Gakkai will always enjoy such smooth sailing as it does now. According to the Gosho, it is inevitable that the three obstacles and four devils will arise and vie with one another to assail us. When that happens, it will be the Suikokai members we will depend upon. President Toda plays the greatest trust in the members of the Suikokai. I would like to do the same. I have been dedicating myself to Kosun Rufu, firmly resolved that it is my mission and destiny to give concrete expression to what President Toda taught. Moreover, since all human beings are destined to die someday, I decided to devote my life to the loftiest of goals. President Toda knew this. That is why he trusted me and extended that same trust to the Suikokai. At the Suikokai outdoor training camp held here at Hikawa 6 years ago, he proposed that we all meet here again 10 years later. He said to us, "There is something I want to ask of you at that time." The 10 years later of which he spoke will coincide, 4 years from now, with the 7th anniversary of his death. By then, the Soka Gakkai will have achieved a membership of 3 million households and the foundation for Kosun Rufu will have been laid, marking the start of the genuine establishment of peace in society. As we look to that day, I'd like each of you to develop your character and ability as a great leader, without ever backsliding in faith. I, too, will do my best. I will strive with all my might and exert myself even harder than I have so far. Let's do it. Let's achieve Kosun Rufu together. Shinichi's guidance deeply penetrated the young men's hearts. It drove home to them how profound their mission truly was and how little they had recognized or appreciated this fact before. They could now understand from the depths of their beings the reason for Shinichi's stern rebuke earlier. They felt a pleasant sense of exhilaration, as if their lives had been washed by a revitalizing shower. The campfire was beginning to die down. "Now, I'd like to answer your questions," Shinichi said. "Everyone, please come on down to the front. Please feel free to ask anything you like." The circle of youth that had surrounded the campfire now dissolved as they moved to gather in front of Shinichi Yamamoto. Countless stars sparkled in the night sky. Brighter still were the eyes of these young men, shining with a beautiful vow for Kosun Rufu. "Well, then, if anyone has any questions, please go ahead," said the MC. Several hands went up immediately. Each question brimmed with dynamic energy and a passionate seeking spirit for Kosun Rufu. One youth asked, "The standoff between Eastern and Western blocs is growing more and more serious. Could we regard this as a manifestation of the disaster of internal strife described by Nichiren Daishonin?" "Yes, I think we can. As a result of advances in transportation and communications, today's world has grown much smaller. The Earth itself is now like one large country. In this respect, we could say that the East-West confrontation corresponds to the disaster of internal strife that Nichiren Daishonin referred to in his day. The time has come for those of us who embrace the Daishonin's Buddhism to take a stand for the sake of the world peace and the happiness of humanity. A humanistic philosophy that restores the focus to the human being and transcends the barriers of conflict arising from differences in ideology will hold the key to peace in the future. This philosophy is Buddhism. What we can do as Buddhists to contribute to the world will become an increasingly important concern for all of us. Once the foundation for Kosen Rufu is laid, I will also begin to challenge this issue head on. Please realize that the arena for your activities is infinite in its size and scope. Inspired by the first question, another young man asked, some countries, such as communist countries, regard religion negatively or deny religious freedom altogether. I feel this will pose the greatest obstacle to Kosen Rufu. What is your opinion? Don't worry. In the long term, these countries will definitely come to accept religion. Any country hoping to realize true social development inevitably will come up against problems in the realm of the human spirit. This is because, ultimately, the development of a nation depends on individuals' inner state of mind, on their spiritual welfare. Irrespective of how sophisticated a country's social system or overall environment may be, these things alone are not sufficient to solve spiritual problems, such as how to overcome human suffering and nurture a desire for self-improvement and a spirit of independence. Continued rejection of religion will only lead to spiritual stagnation and desolation. Therefore, any country seriously concerned about how best to develop and elevate the human spirit will be forced to acknowledge the pressing need for a genuine religion. For that reason too, it is important that we carry out dialogue with the leaders of each country. When trust and empathy are forged through dialogue, it will be possible to open people's eyes to Buddhism in a natural way. In 3 decades, I'm sure you'll understand what I mean. Shinichi Yamamoto was delighted by the young men's questions because he sensed that they were beginning to understand the Soikokai's mission for world peace. A serious-looking, slightly built youth asked the next question. In the Gosho, on attaining Buddhahood, Nichiren Daishonin writes, whether you chant the Buddha's name, recite the sutra, or merely offer flowers and incense, all your virtuous acts will implant benefits and roots of goodness in your life. With this conviction, you should strive in faith. How should we read this passage in terms of our own practice? This passage describes the attitude with which we should serve the Gohonzon and the unwavering dedication we should have towards all our activities for Kosen Rufu. Above all, it is important to have confidence that everything that contributes to Kosen Rufu leads to great benefit and fortune. Those who believe this feel joy and gratitude. They are unlikely to complain or be dissatisfied. I, too, have been practicing faith with this conviction. I have always cheerfully challenged even the bitterest and most difficult obstacles. To support President Toda, I went wherever necessary for Kosen Rufu, juggling my job commitments as best as I could. And if I couldn't scrape together enough money to pay the fare to get there, I was still determined to go even if I had to walk. I believe this is the source of the benefit and good fortune I enjoy today. Suppose you are placed in a position where, for Kosen Rufu, you have to spend the rest of your life in a distant country known for sweltering heat or freezing cold. It comes down to whether you can leave for such a place with a positive and joyful attitude. Without such a spirit and practice, we cannot hope to achieve the great and unprecedented endeavor of Kosen Rufu. The path to accumulating great benefit and good fortune throughout the 3 existences of life lies in such steadfast faith. What I say may sound strict, but since you are Suikokai members, I want to teach you the true path of faith. Shinichi continued to offer guidance, hoping to firmly secure the lasting foundations of faith in the lives of these youthful successors. It was after 8 when the question and answer session ended. In the darkness, the lighthouse flashed its brilliant beam across the water, and the sound of waves echoed around them. The cleanup that followed was swift and efficient. A short while later, Shinichi, flashlight in hand, stopped by several bungalows and tents where the young men were sleeping for the night. He heard them sharing their determinations for Kosenrufu, their eyes sparkling with enthusiasm. Thus, on this day, another concrete step was taken for the future. The young men arose at 5 the next morning. By 7:30, they had finished morning gongyo, eaten breakfast and travelled by bus to a nearby beach. There, the Suikokai members vigorously played various sports, including heated sumo wrestling matches and dodgeball games. Shinichi was deeply encouraged as he watched them refine themselves both physically and spiritually through such strenuous activity. He recalled how Josai Toda, with a delighted smile, had observed similar wrestling bouts. Shinichi knew precisely how his mentor had felt. They both took unique pleasure in watching the boundless development of those to whom they hoped to entrust the future. Shinichi and the directors left Inubosaki shortly after 10 to go to Futsu, where the young women's division Kaiokai was scheduled to hold an outdoor training session. It was around 1 p.m. when they arrived. The Kaiokai members, meanwhile, had left the Sokagakai headquarters by chartered bus at 8 that morning. When he saw Toki Tani, the YWD chief, Shinichi smiled and called out to her, "You all must be tired." "No, we are fine," she replied. "We were a little late getting here because of the heavy traffic, but we are all in high spirits." "It must have been a rough trip. Please have lunch, relax and enjoy yourselves." One of the leaders accompanying Shinichi had briefed Tani over the phone about the guidance the Sokagakai president had given at the Suikokai training session the night before. She had promptly relayed this information to the Kaiokai members before their departure. As a result, she appeared somewhat nervous as she stood before Shinichi, anticipating equally strict guidance from him for the Kaiokai. Contrary to her expectations, however, his words were warm and encouraging. Shinichi was well aware that Toki Tani had been told of the events at the Suikokai training camp. Having heard what had happened to their counterparts in the young men's division, the Kaiokai members would certainly have come to this outdoor training session filled with renewed determination. Shinichi did not intend to give the same guidance twice. He realized that to do so would only inhibit the growth of these young women who were striving so admirably. To raise capable people, it is important to respond flexibly and appropriately to the circumstances of those being addressed. For those who have become lazy or complacent, it may be necessary to awaken them through guidance comparable to the shrill ringing of an alarm. For those who are exhausted or at their wits' end, however, one must offer a soothing melody of hope in the form of warm encouragement. After lunch, the Kaiokai members swam and played a game of dodgeball. The young women's voices rang out cheerfully as they played, making a delightful picture. Shinichi joined them halfway through a dodgeball game. Rather than longing for a glamorous life, each of these young women was exerting herself in faith day and night, working for the happiness of her comrades while struggling to make a living. Shinichi wanted each Kaiokai member to take home golden memories of this outdoor training camp, imprinted forever on the pages of her youthful experience. It warmed their hearts to see President Yamamoto join them in a strenuous game. "Sensei is so busy, yet he has made time for us. Now he's even playing dodgeball with us." Before departing, they gathered with Shinichi one final time. Shinichi kept his remarks extremely brief.
Victory or failure in life cannot be determined until the end of a person's life. No matter how splendid circumstances may once have appeared, if the final chapter of our lives is miserable, we can only conclude that your lives were sad. We can attain true human happiness only when we persevere in a faith that upholds the integrity of the true law. I would, therefore, like you to cherish truth and integrity throughout your lives. Please lead wonderful lives so that women all over the world will praise you as being truly exemplary. This is my wish. Shinichi Yamamoto's guidance expressed in a nutshell his hopes and expectations for these young women. Shinichi returned to Tokyo on the same bus as the Kaiokai members, arriving back at the Sokagakai headquarters after 7 p.m. The Suikokai members, who had returned earlier, were waiting in the main hall on the second floor of the headquarters. Hearing this, Shinichi decided to do evening gongyo with them. He prayed earnestly for each person's growth and development. Please grow, my gallant young friends. Please surpass me and venture forth bravely. For the sake of the members, for the sake of the world. This was his prayer. He was keenly aware that developing capable people would be the only real way to achieve Kosen Rufu. The arrival of August signaled the start of the annual summer training course at the head temple, an event that had become a Soka Gakkai tradition. On August 4th, the evening before, Shinichi Yamamoto attended a leaders' meeting of Hamamatsu chapter in Shizuoka Prefecture, where the head temple is located. He went to the head temple the next morning. Mount Fuji rose majestically against the dazzling backdrop of a deep blue summer sky, its reddish-brown slopes conjuring images of a robust, sun-bronzed youth. Josei Toda had reinstated annual summer training courses in 1946, the year after Japan's defeat in the war. Despite the country's post-war turmoil, Toda lost no time in securing a forum to foster capable people who would usher in the dawn of an age of Soka, an age in which the humanistic principles of the Daishonin's Buddhism would gain wide acceptance. The training course for summer 1960 was to be held over 5 days, August 5th to 9th. Some 8,000 mid-level leaders from all over Japan would attend one of these two sessions, each person staying at the head temple for 2 nights and 3 days. It was a perfect opportunity to raise people who would play a pivotal role as the driving force for achieving a membership of 3 million households. Shinichi, as president, was scheduled to deliver a lecture on the 26th Admonitions of Nikko. After careful thought, he had decided to make this document the prime focus of his lecture. Since his inauguration as the third Soka Gakkai president, a great wave of propagation had swept the country. As the headquarters leaders' meeting on July 29th, five general chapters in the Kanto region were established and 6 new directors appointed, and it was announced that the membership goal of 1.5 million households for that year had already been surpassed. As the Soka Gakkai began its dynamic new advance towards a membership of 3 million households, it was also steadily developing a solid roster of capable leaders for Kosen Rufu. Alone, Shinichi had pondered how to develop this surge of expansion into a great, ever-flowing river of Kosen Rufu. He saw that many of those who had started practicing faith around the time of his inauguration had, in that short period, been able to overcome personal difficulties and attain a measure of security and stability. The resulting joy, he realized, had further fueled their efforts at propagation. Yet, if Soka Gakkai members were to stand firm in the face of persecution and achieve Kosen Rufu, it was vital that their faith not be directed solely towards the limited pursuit of personal satisfaction. And Nichiren declares that the varied sufferings that all living beings undergo, all these are Nichiren's own sufferings. In waging his struggle for Kosen Rufu, the Daishonin took the sufferings of all people as his own, fully prepared to meet all obstacles that came his way. Most important, then, was how earnestly his followers could carry on with this spirit of faith. When we look beyond narrow self-gratification and devote our lives to the happiness of all people, only then do we truly carry out the faith of a follower of Nichiren. Such faith is the fountainhead from which the majestic and endless river of Kosen Rufu will flow. It is also the direct path to attaining the profoundly joyous state of absolute happiness, a state of mind like the Daishonin's, which enabled him to declare during his exile on Sado Island, "I feel immeasurable delight." How should we practice so as to achieve such a state of life? What guiding principles should we follow? As Shinichi Yamamoto pondered this, the precepts set forth in the 26 admonitions of Nikko sprang vividly to his mind. These cautionary articles are nothing but eternal and unchanging guidelines laid down by Nikko Shonin, the Daishonin's direct disciple and immediate successor, to enable future believers to uphold faith directly connected to and one with Nichiren Daishonin. On reflection, the Gakkai has been carrying out faith precisely as these admonitions instructed. Tsunesaburo Makiguchi, the first president, had died in prison, selflessly devoting himself to the propagation of the Daishonin's teachings and rigorously protecting the integrity of the true law. Inheriting his spiritual legacy, his disciple Josei Toda strove to make the Daishonin's decree to accomplish Kosen Rufu a reality by pledging solemnly to achieve a membership of 750,000 households, a dream brought to magnificent fruition. These facts clearly show the Soka Gakkai as an organization that has truly emerged in accord with the Buddha's will and decree. Therefore, Shinichi decided that the 26 admonitions of Nikko should be studied thoroughly at the upcoming summer training course. Arriving at the head temple shortly after noon, without a moment's rest, he attended a meeting of study department professors at the Rikkyobo Lodging Temple. There, they reviewed theses on Buddhist doctrine submitted by candidates seeking to qualify as study department professors. After careful deliberation, 14 new professors were appointed. 12 of them, including two women, were youth division members. It gave Shinichi great pleasure to see capable young people steadily emerging on the forefront of Buddhist study. When all the activities on the first day had been concluded, Shinichi sat alone at the desk in one of the rooms on the second floor of the Rikkyobo Lodging Temple. He was preparing for the lecture he was to give the next day. The night air was filled with the croaking of frogs and the gentle murmuring of the stream that flowed through the head temple grounds. Shinichi gazed silently around the room. It was the same room that Josei Toda had occupied for more than a month just before his death. Shinichi had been at his side constantly during that time, with mentor and disciple sharing many long talks. Memories of their time together in this room were like moving, golden-hued scenes from a series of exquisite paintings. A surge of deep affection and nostalgia overwhelmed Shinichi. That brings us to the end of today's reading. Until next time.